Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fire Engineering Radio and to our show, Pride and Ownership, the Love for the Job. I'm your host, Chief Rick Lasky, and last time we were together, we talked about how some things got started and along this whole Pride and Ownership thing, and it's amazing, just within a week or so, since we did that first show and posted it on the website, how much feedback we've gotten, and folks, sending some emails and calling about some of the different programs they're doing and some of the impacts they're making on the fire service. It's exciting. I think it's an exciting time for the fire service. We've got some exciting things going on here in Louisville. I have to mention today, my bomb and arson chief, division chief Terry McGrath, is graduating from his ATF Explosives Canine Detection School in Virginia. Terry had been through that program once before and was assigned a dog, Daisy. Was a wonderful dog. Unfortunately, she caught that megavirus and we lost her in 2 days, and it just, we missed her so much. And Terry, being the guy that he is, and his family decided they're going to step up and take that assignment again. And I know ATF regards him as one of their best handlers. But he's graduating today, and our two assistant chiefs, Daryl Brown and Tim Tittle, are going to be there for his graduation. And he'll be on his way home with Aretha. It was going to be Ricky Bobby Baby Jesus. I think that one went to India. Isadora or Aretha. So we got our ringtone set on respect with Aretha Franklin. So when he comes back, we'll know when he's calling. We spent last weekend in Sweet Home, Oregon. A great group of people out there, Chief Mike Beaver. And again, here's another department, like they are all over the country, doing some pretty incredible things when it comes to reinstilling that pride and ownership and getting some of the traditions and ceremonies and things back into the fire service. Sometimes you go to these places and you're visiting with folks, and you know, and what's really exciting is to find out that they're already doing some really neat things right where they're at. Received an article from a firefighter in South Bend, Indiana, about we do so many of these programs and do so many of these different outreach things, and some of them are you know, helping people recover from fires, and we're going to talk about it a little bit later, but some of it's just getting out there and making a difference and helping people get through their day, especially with, you know, stressful as things can be. But got a great email from Pete, an engineer on Engine Company 8 in South Bend, Indiana, and he just wanted to tell us that, you know, they were out working in a neighborhood where they have an annual Christmas event, holiday event, and you know, helping Santa do some things like we've all talked about and getting out there in the community, and they actually caught a run on that block of a man choking. The newspapers did a great job writing up called Santa's Little Helper Turns Lifesaver, and got there and found a male victim down, blue, choking, and were able to remove the object and get him breathing again, and turned what could have been a horrible event into something very positive, and the folks are obviously very appreciative. And here, just, you know, just a side effect, if you will, of or sidebar of going out and helping someone and doing another program, and they happen to be right there when things happen. So, you know, he sent us that. I know Joel Hewitt in Minnesota, they did an engine wedding down in an in-service a while back, and turned it into a big-time community event, and it was covered well. And so, you know, let us hear about your programs and how you're making a difference. We'll give you some emails at the end again, but let us know what you're doing so we can brag on you and tell the rest of the fire service world what you're doing. A couple other quick notes. Fire engineering is looking, from what I understand, Chief Halton told me that Peter and the group are getting ready. Hopefully in the future they're going to change the website up a little bit, and it already looks great, but add a couple things. I know a lot of people have been asking where they can find this show or the podcast or the radio show. Unfortunately, there's still a lot of firefighters that don't know what a podcast is, but and that's the question I've been getting the last couple of weeks. But if you go right to the middle, you know, obviously the webpage for Fire Engineering is www.fireengineering.com. If you go right to the middle of the front page there, you'll see podcasts and videos. There's a bunch of great stuff that Chief Halton did while he was over in FDIC out in the east there, portion of the world. And there's some other things. You've got the blog on there. Like I said, there's some pretty cool things that fire engineering is doing with that website, and once you get on it, you'll have a hard time getting off. So last show, we kicked off the whole Pride and Ownership program here with Peter and the folks called How Pride and Ownership All Got Started, how the program came about. And with today's show, we're going to take the whole How It All Got Started to another level. We've got an incredible guest. I brag on him everywhere I go, every class I teach, and I mean that truthfully. Every class I teach, I mention the name Glenn Corbett. And Glenn's a professor with John Jay College in Manhattan. He's an assistant chief with the Waldwick, New Jersey Fire Department. Been in the fire service pretty much 30 years. If you've had anything to do with the fire service, you definitely know who he is. Besides him being a technical editor for fire engineering, he's probably, and I know he gets embarrassed when I say this, he's going to argue with me, but he's probably by far the smartest firefighter I've ever met on the face of the earth when it comes to whether it's codes, history, what we do. I mean, you ask him anything, it's almost scary how much he knows and how quick he can get it back to you. You know, you'll see on the website he does Corbett's Trivia, constantly pushing the history, and we're going to talk about that. He's got a column in the magazine. You know, he does a lot of articles. He's got one called The Professor. I know he's on the blog. He's got the book he did, was asked to, and I know it was an honor for him to work with Frank Brannigan before his passing and to make sure that book got published on building construction afterwards, and is just an absolutely incredible person. And I'd like to welcome Chief Glenn Corbett this morning. How are you, Glennie?
Hey, Chief Rick, how you doing?
I'm doing good, buddy. One of the things, a lot of people come up, Glenn, all the time and ask, when we did tradition for the first time at FDIC in Indy, you know, often, you know, people will sit there and see Glenn and I when we get together, and when we start going on the fire service, you know, history and traditions and ceremonies, and when you can get Glenn going, it's awesome. People just pull up a chair and get notepads out, and we did that first program, and typical Glenn walked in about 5 minutes before. We had about 1,000 people in the room, and he said, "Ricky, I changed the program up a little bit," and I went, "Okay." He goes, "Yeah, just can you do me about a 20-25 minute like simulated keynote, like you're talking to the candidates on their first day?" And he said, that kid in the front row there with his cell phone, pick on him and let's throw around this. And we had a lot of fun with that, Glenn, and people keep asking when we're going to do that again.
Yeah, that was fun doing that and everything. And I threw the mic and look what happened. Boy, it was that room was full of excitement. Let's put it that way, especially from something that the guys in the audience didn't even realize that they were going to be part of the presentation.
Oh,
let's
they
put
were
it that
shocked.
Way.
Do you remember when Murph walked in after we had the problem with the lights going off, and I kind of made my threat that we'd go out and beat someone up if the lights went off again? He came in and said, "Turn the lights down," so they could see Glenn. And the one kid said, "Are you kidding me? Come over and beat me up." But hey, Glenn, real quick, and buddy, we've talked about this before, but for other folks out there, how did you get into the fire service? How did it all start for you?
Well, like a lot of guys in the fire service, it was a family tradition and everything. My father actually was involved in the fire service when I was growing up and stuff. He ended up being a chief in our department in Waldwick, and have been an auxiliary in Patterson for several years, and so I just kind of got interested in it, and you know, decided that this was a great career, and ended up you know, basically you know, got involved in a bunch of different things. Worked in Texas for about 10 years in San Antonio and Austin, and back up here in Jersey, and teaching in the city. And like I said, it's as everybody would tell you, I'm sure, Rick, in the fire service, you know, it's a calling. You know, it's something that you know, it's not a 9-to-5 job, certainly. And you know, people who have gotten involved with this realize that pretty quickly, that it's you know, that there's, and again, you know, we're talking about tradition today, there's a history and a tradition in this fire service that you know, really sets the tone for how we do things and why we do things and that kind of stuff.
Well, and again, I, you know, knowing that you're a second generation firefighter, and there's some folks out there that are third and even further than that, is just, and I know your passion. I know you're my buddy and my brother, and we talk all the time. And I know you've got to get a lot of great feedback on the book that you did, you know, on building construction with Frank, and then got out. I know a lot of folks I talked to all say, have you gotten that book yet? And I'm going, absolutely, I got it as soon as it came out. That's got to make you feel good. And I know I always embarrass you, buddy, but I have to. I mean, we were talking right before we started. You know, when you were down here, you know, last night I got up for a run in the middle of the night, and one of the first things I thought of, because I was excited knowing you're going to be on the show this morning, is, you know, the time you were down here for the Fire Chiefs Convention in Dallas, and, you know, knowing that you'd been down here in Texas and how much your wife liked the tortillas, and next thing you know, you were wrapping them up in tinfoil and plastic and FedExing them next day back, and Diane Feldman was in the front seat with me, and you and Tom Freeman were in the back, and I said, I've got the two smartest firefighters in the world sitting in the back car, and I wish I had a tape recorder to tape what you guys were talking about, because it was incredible. But you've got to get a lot of great feedback on that book, and just, you know, the feeling of being able to do that with Frank.
Well, like, I appreciate that, Rick. I am certainly not that person, but yeah, it's you know, as many of us do, we have a love for the history, and you know, we're much different than a lot of other organizations, you know, and you know, just a quick tidbit, family wise and stuff. It was kind of interesting several years ago, because I collect, as Rick does, I collect firefighting antiques and things like that, and many years ago, I picked up a silk, how you'd even describe it, a silk set of portraits of all the company and senior officers in the New York City Fire Department in 1906. It was interesting about it was that I had my grandfather's uncle actually was at that time they were called foreman, which is today what we call a captain, of Engine Company 1 in Manhattan. And we never knew what he looked like, you know. And the weirdest thing is that when I received this big silk, again, set of portraits, basically, it's probably 3.5 feet long and probably about 3 feet high, this thing. And there's literally hundreds of portraits on there. There was one guy, we couldn't make out the name of who this person, you know, we thought it was probably him, but the name was kind of rubbed out because it was old. It was 100 years old, basically, and kind of hard to make out. So flash forward 2 years later, I end up at a meeting on Randall's Island at the Fire Academy, and I had been told that there was another one of these floating around out there at the training academy. And sure enough, I'm sitting in a conference room looking out this glass window, and lo and behold, here's the other one, the matching pair of this one.
Wow.
And what the funny thing was is I went over to it, and it was actually a much better condition than what I have, but sure enough, I went right up to it. I knew what picture I was looking for, and there was my grandfather's uncle sitting on that sitting on that portrait there. And what was ironic about it was that he was killed about a year later at a fire on 14th Street. So it was quite the thing, you know. My grandfather talked about him, and you know, he'd know I loved the fire service, certainly loved fire service history, and we really came full circle, you know. So you never know when history is gonna present itself to you, right, Rick? I mean,
especially family wise, buddy. And just,
right.
I mean, a similar story. You know, you've met, you know, Ray Hoff,
sure,
battalion chief from Chicago, was best man, at Jamie and I at our wedding. And you know, when I was doing all my collections, I don't know if I told you this, you know, I had another firefighter say, well, you know, my grandfather's had this box, and you can have it. There's some training books from Chicago in there. And he gave it to me, and it had to do with training on the new snorkels when Quinn came out with them, and, you know, the truckman's belt, which is kind of synonymous with the Chicago Fire Department, you know.
Sure.
Different things in there. There was a big black three-ring binder. I opened up, it was someone's personal training book with their notes, handwritten notes, you know, flyers, information, you know, manuals. And I looked at the name on the label inside. It was Battalion Chief Thomas Hoff from the Chicago Fire Department.
Wow.
It was dated, I think if I remember right, a month before he was killed in the line of duty.
Wow.
Back on Valentine's Day, back in the 60s, with the whole, the son holding the helmet and all those different things. And I couldn't wait to get it to Ray and say, here, you know, I belongs with you. It had their home address, and just one of those things, like you say, that all of a sudden, how many years later, you come across something, and
sure,
you know, such a small thing can be something so special.
Sure.
And I have to tell one more quick story about Glenn. We're, you know, one of our battalion chiefs, Jerry Wells, here does different things with his folks regarding building construction. Gets some, kind of gives them little quizzes. And one day, I walked into the kitchen at our central station. They're all sitting there doing a quiz on building construction, history in the fire service. And Jerry Wells, the battalion chief, who, by the way, this month's issue of Fire Engineering in the Roll Call series for December did a great article on the rookie firefighter, what you need to do to prepare for the job once you get there, what your the expectations of. I mean, that's one of those ones, Glenn, that we need to copy. And when you have a young firefighter or a young man or woman come up to you and say, you know, what's it take to be a firefighter and what's going to be expected of me, you can hand it to them. So, Jerry, you need to take a look at that. Jerry did a great job with that. But and he had this contest. Whoever came up with the right answer, he'd buy root beer floats for him. And so I called Glenn on the phone, on his cell phone. He's on the subway headed home from John Jay from the college. And I think we had you on the phone for like 45 minutes while you're riding the subway. And on the speakerphone, and guys were asking all kinds of questions, and Glenn was rattling stuff off, and I could only imagine what the folks on the subway are going, who's he talking to, and why is he talking about fires from way back when?
But, and it was in the winter, too. It was actually on the platform. It was pretty cold out there.
Well, you know, and Glenn, tell me, I know we've talked about, you know, how long fire engineering's been around, but give me a little history on before we get into the rest of this stuff about fire engineering. I know, you know, a couple times I've been there, the archives with all the magazines
sure.
and issues. Tell me a little bit about fire engineering.
Well, you know, if you look back in the 19th century, there were different startups with essentially, you almost could call them actually more newspapers than they were even magazines per se, because there weren't really magazines back then around the Civil War or even earlier than that. So they're essentially newspapers that were dedicated to a variety of different industries, things that, you know, people were interested in. And, of course, one of them was the fire service. And there was a few startups before the Civil War, but they really didn't go anywhere. And then post-Civil War, things really started to change, even just in the printing industry in general and, you know, different types of paper, for example, things. Well, anyway, not too long after Civil War, of course, in 1877, fire engineering wasn't called that then. It was called the National Fireman's Journal. Started publishing, and this is the guys will get a kick out of this weekly. Well, we'll call them today again magazines or even newspapers, but they were weekly. Of course, they had no photographs. They didn't have any you know, features like we have today. Of course, they did have illustrations that illustrated, particularly for ads and for, you know, steam fire apparatus, that kind of thing. But they were unique, though, because this was the first time that, and especially again with the National Fireman's Journal, that there was a continuing, ongoing transfer of information within the fire service. And really, what it really focused on was not so much in the earliest days of like training articles and things like that, but it was really just talking about what was going on in different fire departments. So if you were to look in the 1870s or 1880s in the again, National Fireman's Journal, you would see that they talk about that the Dubuque, Iowa Fire Department bought a brand new steamer, or Los Angeles had just tried out new uniforms or whatever. It was a lot of stuff in there. And what was really funny about it, Rick, is that that they had things called random sparks, okay, which were like jokes and funny things about the fire service. So it was quite something. And Rick, I think you know, for the listeners here today, that you know, something we're trying to do, because we realize how important this is, but what we're trying to do is that to somehow get this material digitized, to get it out to the fire service, because literally the entire fire service history is in Fairlawn, New Jersey, on the shelf, because literally all the departments, and if you think about 1877, this is a time when, you know, there's a transition from the volunteer to the paid sector. You know, New York City, of course, went paid in 1865, Philadelphia in 1871. You know, this is the time period when there's a transition from in the bigger cities from volunteers to career firefighters. This is also the time, of course, when we're transitioning from, you know, hand-operated apparatus, you know, that was used pretty much right up to, you know, 5 or so years before the Civil War, into, of course, steam apparatus. Chemical wagons are coming in, you know, coming into play at that point. So this is a great trend. And, of course, the fires themselves. I mean, you think about fire engineering has seen just about every fire after the Great Chicago Fire and Boston Fire of 1872. I mean, it's seen just about everything through those years. So fire engineering, like I said, has what we call it today. Just an unbelievable set of our collective history, basically, about just about every fire department in America. There's information about it. So anyway, it's an exciting thing. We're trying to work out the logistics of something like this. It's not going to happen soon, but we're working on it and things.
The first time I saw that, when Diane showed me that room, it was like something that you see with Nicolas Cage in National Treasure. I walked in that back room, I think we were still in Saddlebrook then, and I looked, and I just saw, and I go, you're kidding me, that's everything right there. And it was, I was almost afraid to touch, I was just like, oh my, it's the information and the stuff. I mean, I don't know if, now Diane does Fire Yenta, which is kind of the Sparks thing you were talking about, and then we've got round tables. I know those were back then, and Random Thought. I mean, it's kind of funny. Do you see a lot of we've talked about it before, but a lot of the same stuff kind of cycling through, that we're back to a lot of the same things that were going on way back when.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you'll if you were to look in these journals, and I didn't, if I just printed out what was in there, you wouldn't necessarily recognize that that what you're reading is maybe 80 or 100 years old. I think one of the best examples, several years ago, some of you may have remembered a bad fire in, I believe it was Hamlet, South Carolina, in a chicken processing facility. I think it killed somewhere around 20-some-odd people. And when we wrote an editorial at the time about the fire, the then-editor, Bill Manning, and I had actually went back and pulled out the essentially the text from the report on the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in 1911, and we just took that and I ran that as the beginning part of this editorial. And so, of course, as the readers are reading this, they're thinking we're talking about the Hamlet fire, the chicken processing plant. But in fact, they were reading about an almost identical situation in the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire in 1911. So it was, to show you how, to tell your listeners that, believe me, there's a lot of stuff in those old journals that we think of as new today, but they were thinking about a lot, not everything, but they were thinking about a lot of the same issues that we're talking about today. So,
isn't it amazing? I mean, and not only that, Glenn, we've talked about this as well, is unfortunately, when you look at the line of duty deaths that are occurring today, we've said this for all the different classes, whether John Selko does it through Get Out Alive, or we did it through Saber, or you've done it with your programs, it's the same stuff killing us. You could almost take one of those articles probably from back then about a firefighter that lost his life and play it out today, and it's the same.
Yep.
Unfortunately, it's the same stuff going on.
Yep. And like you say, it's you look back there and you think, wow, we really, of course we're in this, in this day and age in 2007, the end of 2007, looking at what's going on in the fire service and thinking, well, some of these things are fairly new, and there are some, of course, lightweight construction, things like that are relatively new to the fire service, but so many other things, it's the same thing over and over again, and that's why I think really we're history, plays an important role. Some firefighters I talk to, especially when we talk about building construction things, wonder why, for example, in Frank's book, that there's constant references to earlier fires. And I think probably a lot of guys realize that that's our history, number one. And number two is that, we're repeating some of the same things over and over again. And certainly we fight fires in buildings that are 100 years old. If there were lessons learned in the 1930s about a particular issue, it's certainly even still appropriate for today. So it's, history is really, it's a fun thing. It's really kind of interesting to talk about, but in a sense, it's also an integral part of how we handle things today and why we do certain things, because again, it's something that's particularly relevant to our safety, especially.
Well, and I think, and that's why I was so excited to I knew you would, but you're such a busy guy, to get you to to be with us today. And we're probably, you know, the way of looking at it, and I'm even more excited about this because it'll give us more time. We're going to probably do a part one with Glenn and then a part two. And when you just led in perfectly to what we want to talk about today, or start off talking about today, as our main topic. And that's, I guess, you know, the fire service, the traditions and the ceremonies, everything from the terminology and why we do what we do, and then, you know, all that great stuff, and then lead right into, you know, some of the fires that have impacted. And you mentioned something, Glenn, and you taught me this, and then I realized this with my quest for antiques and that. When I started reading rule books from, like, the Brooklyn Fire Companies and things back in the, you know, 1800s and journals, and realizing a lot of what we do today, both in the paid and volunteer side of things, a lot of how we do it is set and was set and dictated by how they did things with horses and things way back when. But I know everywhere I go, I mean, everybody wants to know, Glenn, about, you know, the stuff that you and I have so much fun talking about. And I thought this would be a great way to get it out to people that can't be with us every time we're at a conference together having supper and talking. But terminology-wise, let's get into that. You know, when we did tradition, we listed a bunch of different things, and I just kind of pulled up a chair, and I just sit there and take notes and listen, because you amaze me. And I know I keep embarrassing you, but it's true, buddy. You're just amazing when it comes to everything in the fire service.
Stay tuned for part two of this podcast next week.